Jesus said, "If your brother or your sister sins against you, go and correct them when you are alone together. If they listen to you, then you've won over your brother or your sister. But if they won't listen, take with you one or two others so that every word may be established by the mouth of two or three witnesses. But if they still won't pay attention, report it to the church. If they won't pay attention even to the church, treat them as you would a Gentile and tax collector. I assure you that whatever you fasten on earth will be fastened in heaven, and whatever you loosen on earth will be loosened in heaven. Again, I assure you that if two of you agree on earth about anything you ask, then my Father who is in heaven will do it for you. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm there with them." Here ends the reading of God's holy word. Praise be to God. Would you pray with me? God, we've come seeking quiet communion with you. Please, by your word and spirit, speak to us in the stillness of this place. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable and pleasing in your sight. O Lord, our rock and our blessed Redeemer. Amen. Welcome to Resurrection United Methodist Church. I'm the senior pastor, Chris Neen. I'm glad that you're here, that you made it in this winter weather. If you reach into your bulletin, you'll find a GPS, a Grow, Pray, and Study guide, and probably your afternoon and evening plans have been dashed, so you'll have plenty of time to go over the GPS, and if you haven't discovered it, take a look at it. It's designed to help you have a daily quiet time of 10 minutes, 15 minutes of reading Scripture and praying and tuning in with God, and I hope that you've taken up that challenge. We're in a new sermon series, and we're looking at ways in which individuals, married couples, families, organizations get off track. Last week we talked about functional and dysfunctional communication. Today we're going to take it one more step further, and we're going to talk about conflict management. Most of the time, you'll know that you're in a conflicted situation when you can't solve your problems. It seems like you never get to the point where the problem is identified and it's resolved. And they just, problems keep layering on, piling up. Over the years, it becomes this mountain that seems too high to get to the summit. People just get buried by these unresolved problems. And many times, you feel the pain before you can actually intellectually begin to think the problem here is that we can't solve our problems. I'm just so frustrated. I don't feel heard, or I don't feel respected. There's a lot of different ways that this comes out. And what we're trying to do in this sermon series is say, hey, what's the functional way that healthy people resolve problems in their life, whether it be at work, in a marriage, family? We've all probably been in unhealthy work situations. There's a reason that it's unhealthy. There's something that's being done or not done that's making that dysfunctional. And so we want to get a better handle on that. One of the things that people do that is dysfunctional is they jump to conclusions. They see something that's happened, just a picture in time, and they don't know everything that led up to it, or they don't know the bigger picture, and they just jump to a conclusion. I remember hearing somebody say, she gets all her exercise from jumping to conclusions. I thought it was funny, but it's often something that people do. They don't take the time to understand the bigger picture. I saw this commercial, and it made me think of that statement. Give your attention to the screen.
You got to go down. Come on.
Ha! America's
sure, it
mortgage,
looks bad.
Proud sponsor of the NFL.
Maybe it's not as bad as you think. Maybe there's a lot of things in our life that aren't as bad as we think. Maybe they're worse than we think. But we want to have a plan or a process for dealing with that. And that's what I just read to you out of the Gospel of Matthew, is Matthew recording the teachings of Christ on a basic plan for resolving conflict within the church. Now you think, well, can't be any conflict in the church. I mean, it's all these nice people and they're all trying to follow Christ. Wherever you have two or three people gathered together, not only is the Lord there, but there's conflict because there can be disagreements about way things that can be done. And we all bring our own baggage into the church. So many times if we're poor at resolving conflict at home in our personal life, it's not like as we walk through these doors, we miraculously become really good at resolving conflict here. We often bring our dysfunction wherever we go. Wherever I go, there I am. That's the statement, and it's true. And so one of the things that we're trying to learn here is how to be self-reflective. And how might I be contributing to dysfunctional conflict management within my own home? And what are some things that I could do in order to learn how to be better at solving problems with people that I work with or people that I live with? Conflict management begins with just being able to identify what's healthy from what's not healthy. Remember, that's part of what this sermon series is about. When do I know that this is not healthy? Because maybe what was normal in our household, although it's normal and what we're comfortable with, isn't healthy. It doesn't actually help us identify problems and solve problems in our life. So I have a side-by-side here. 7 deadly habits to resolving conflict with people is criticizing, blaming, you know, making it personal, complaining, nagging, threatening, punishing, bribing, rewarding to control. I would also say avoidance. Those are all ways in which we behave. And if you find in your own home, as you're reflecting back on conflict that is difficult to be around in your own household, it's spiraling out of control, some or many of those issues are probably involved in the reason why it's dysfunctional. Healthy conflict management is supportive, it's encouraging, there's listening, there's accepting, there's trusting, there's respecting, there's negotiating the differences. If I boil down those two categories, the category on the left would be cooperative. Conflict management in a healthy environment is cooperative. Everybody's trying to work toward a win-win. You might have a real deep disagreement. It might be a difficult negotiating process, but the spirit and the heart of the person that you're dealing with is, I really want this to work out. Let's just keep plugging away here. If we can, I'll explain what I mean by plugging away at problem solving. But if it's on the right side, that right side, unhealthy category, it's competitive. Somebody's trying to win. Sometimes you're trying to win by getting big and large and loud, abusive with your words or physically, or you're becoming passive. You don't think of being passive as a way of trying to win, but it is. It's a try to avoid responsibility. I'm not going to let you nail me down. I'm going to try to get out of this thing. This is really uncomfortable. Any of this sound familiar in your own life? And what we want to do as the followers of Christ is we want to move more and more into that left-hand column, the healthy column. This is the process of Christ. So there's a cost to this. And maybe that's the first thing we have to come to grips with. What happens when we don't deal with the problems in our life? They're bigger, right? They just don't stay dormant. If it's really a problem, maybe it's not a problem for you, but it's a problem for somebody else, and they don't feel like that problem's getting resolved, is that problem going away for them? No. They're getting more and more frustrated. There's a woman that, there's a book called Crucial Conversations. It's one of those books that kind of follows on with Seven Habits of Highly Successful People by Covey. And in it, they're studying the cost to business when people avoid crucial conversations, which is another way of saying difficult conversations within a business place. You realize you've begun to identify a problem, but you don't necessarily want to have that problem with your supervisor. You don't necessarily want to have that conversation with an employer or a peer because you know it's going to be uncomfortable, and you're trying to look at what's the cost of that. And what they'd estimate is for every crucial conversation that doesn't take place, it's about $1,500 per conversation that doesn't take place and about 8 hours of a person's time, an employee's time. And what they're pointing out in that is it takes that much longer to resolve that problem the longer that it's delayed, the longer that that conversation doesn't take place. And it's not just business that has bottom lines. Marriages have bottom lines. That's why there's divorce. Families have bottom lines. Kids have bottom lines. That's why there's estrangement. Ignoring the problems that we have in our life does not make them go away as much as we wish that it would. They just get bigger and angrier and more difficult to deal with. So what we want to do is we want to learn how to do this better. I have an illustration of a couple that was willing to speak up and say, you know, what it was like for them. It's a pretty notable couple. It's Rick and Kay Warren, and he is the pastor of Saddleback Church, the author of Purpose Driven Life, New York Times bestseller. And Kay wrote a book and just talked about how their marriage descended into hell. These are two they're good people. It's acknowledged in the book. They're good people, but they could not see eye to eye on things. They're very different people. Of course, we're different people. If you didn't marry, unless you married a Siamese twin, and even then you're probably going to have differences of opinion, you married a different person. But if you can't appreciate those differences and if you can't work with those differences, they can be really frustrating, and that's what happened for them. It just got to the point where they didn't even want to see each other. That's what happens when we don't start addressing the problem, to the point where it can get you a good marriage can begin to think about, we'd be better off alone. I'd be better off without you. So what do we do? Well, if we go back to what Jesus is saying, it begins with a one-on-one conversation. And for some people, they can come on too strong in that one-on-one. They're comfortable with the one-on-one conversation, but they come in with guns blazing like a bull in a china shop, and everybody's fleeing for their life. And for other people, the dysfunctional behavior that can happen in that one-on-one is, as soon as I have any sense that there's going to be trouble here, I'm out of here. I'm going to check out. Maybe if I can't physically get out of here, I'm just not going to participate in this because this stinks. Hiram Smith, who is part of the Covey Group, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, he wrote a pretty good step-by-step of when you want to talk to somebody at work or when you want to talk to your spouse or when you want to talk to your kid about a problem. A pretty safe way to do that gives four steps. He says the first step is say, I have a problem. And say, you have a problem. It's just, right now, I have a problem. And what that does is that it allows the other person at least not to get totally on the defensive and throw up their shield right away. I mean, it's not great to hear that somebody that you care about or even somebody that you don't care about says they have a problem and they're talking to you, but it's a better way to start the conversation with that I statement, I have a problem. The second step is this is how I view the problem. Again, the other person, all they have to do is just listen. I have a problem. This is how I view the problem. The third step, we're getting a little bit more intimate with each question because we're revealing a little bit more of ourselves. Is this how this problem makes me feel? I'm not going to tell you how you feel. I'm just going to tell you how I feel. I don't feel safe, or I feel angry, or I feel disappointed, or I feel hopeless, or I feel frustrated. A lot of dysfunctional people have a hard time identifying their feelings because feelings weren't okay. In the family that they grew up with, it was just sort of a suck it up attitude. And maybe sometimes we do have to suck it up just in order to get the thing done, but it's okay to feel the thing that you feel. It's your feeling. I have a problem. This is how I view the problem, and this is how the problem makes me feel. Number four is where things get interesting. Because now I've said how I feel, and the next point, 4A, is if you and I continue in this behavior, do you think the situation will get better or worse? If we just keep doing what we're doing, do you think that eventually this, we're just going to exit this and it's not going to be a problem anymore? Or do you think if we just keep doing the thing that we're doing here, it's going to get worse? This is really an invitation to them to begin joining in the conversation. And if it's a healthy conversation and they do see that, yeah, I can see that this is a problem, if there's that cooperative spirit, there's a safe environment, you might say, I see that this is a problem. 4B is the tough one. Do you want this relationship to get better or worse? It's one thing. If you think that this problem is just going to get worse, do you care whether it gets better or worse? And everybody knows the right answer. Well, I care. Do you care enough to start solving this problem with me? If we can. If the answer is yes, I want to solve this problem, then there's a process that you can follow. Everybody's pretty familiar with it. I'll run through it. But if they answer, no, I don't care, that's a different kettle of fish, and that begins a different negotiation. If they say, yeah, I do care about whether our relationship gets better or worse, and you can see how that could take place. I mean, I'm talking in sort of familiar ways, but a boss and employee could have this conversation. Two peers could have in a workplace could have this conversation. Coach and a player could have a conversation like this. If the person cares, then we start the process of what's the problem that we're trying to deal with. Can we both agree? Because we don't want to try to solve six problems. We're going to have a hard enough time just solving one problem. So let's just start with dealing with that one problem. One of the dysfunctional things that people do is if they're in a win-lose type of competitive type of problem solving and they feel like they're losing, they'll start throwing everything in the kitchen sink into the problem solving to fog what's going on. And maybe you do that. Or maybe somebody in your family does that. And part of this sermon series is to say that's not healthy. That's dysfunctional. What's healthy is to say, you know, this is what we're talking about right now. Maybe we can talk about this other thing some other time, but right now we're going to talk about this problem. And then a distinctive Christian step in this that you won't hear in a corporate setting if you go to a seminar on problem solving is, how do I contribute to the problem? Remember Jesus, deal with the log in your own eye before you deal with the speck in somebody else's eye? It's a real decompression moment if you can say, you know, this is what I do that contributes to the problem. It's like saying, I love you enough and I feel confident enough in you that I can be vulnerable and admit this to you. I do this. And I know it's not helping the situation. And it's really great if the other person can also volunteer something that they see they're doing that's contributing to the problem. Then we can get to the third step, and that's just what are some possible solutions for this, and try not to be judgmental because you want people to just throw ideas out. If you're judgmental and you hold your nose when they make a decision or offer something, then they're probably not going to offer other things. Then pick one of those ideas or combine some ideas and come up with an action step and try to move ahead. That's meeting one-on-one with somebody that cares. But let's say they care, but you still can't resolve the problem. What's the next step? Well, according to Jesus, it's to bring in somebody from the outside. Dr. Edward de Bono, he made a good statement. He said, disputants that are having a hard time resolving their problem are in the worst position to solve their own disputes. You know, once you've tried to resolve this problem and it's not getting resolved, I mean, the only piece of advice that I got from my premarital counseling that was worth anything was, if you have tried for 6 months to resolve a problem and you can't resolve it on your own, you've got to go get outside help, competent outside help, competent being the key word. You've exhausted everything that you know, everything that you've seen, everything that you've read. You've both tried to bring that into the situation. And at 6 months, if you've been trying to resolve this and it's not getting resolved, now we're at the point where if we keep forging ahead, that's the definition of insanity. And everybody knows what that is, right? Just keep doing the same thing that we've been doing, but expect different results. It's not going to happen. We've exhausted all that. We need some fresh thinking around here. We need a competent counselor, competent advisor. We need somebody to come in to help us. What that third party does in the church, that's a member of the SPRC. At school, it's probably one of the counselors or member of the staff. At work, it's a supervisor, it's a HR person, somebody that's going to come in there and hear this out and try to help the communication. And they bring fresh thinking in, because if you're in conflict with somebody over a period of time, pretty soon everybody knows what the dance is. I say this, and then she says this, and then I say this, and then I respond this way, and then it's just like you want to throw up. But a good counselor will pause that. They'll break up the dance. They'll ask a question. They'll give an assignment. There's accountability. We'll have to go back and report to this person. And hopefully that will help move the ball down the field. That's what healthy people do. Maybe for pride reasons, we say, I don't want to air my dirty laundry. That's dysfunctional. When we're saying things like that, I don't want to talk to somebody else, that's dysfunctional. You want to be able to get outside help. And then if you get that outside help, but you get bogged down again, and sometimes you're going to have pugnacious problems like that, then there needs to be a higher authority. In third world countries, people that resolve conflict resolution in third world countries, there's differences in other cultures in the way that they resolve conflict than in the United States. And one of the ways is there's more of a community sense of, when you have a problem, it affects a larger group of people. We're so individually oriented, so individualistic, that we tend to think that our problems are only our problems, but they're not. If mom and dad are not getting along, it's the kid's problem as well. In fact, it's probably beginning to affect the extended family. If there's problems in the Sunday school and it's not getting resolved and people are getting more and more frustrated, that begins to leak out into other relationships within the church, and the people in the sanctuary have some ownership over what's going on in the Sunday school. And so in third world countries, there's often an acknowledgement that there's outside groups or there's outside ways for other people that are affected by this, or recognized leaders to get involved to help resolve this conflict, because it's affecting all of us. In the church, that's bringing it to the staff parish relations committee. I mean, if there's a problem in the Sunday school, we're not going to bring the problem in the Sunday school to 500 people here in the church. It's awkward. It's cumbersome. It's not going to work. So we have the church elect 12 people that represent the church, and then when they go in there, these disputants, one of the first things that's said to them is, this body will decide for the church what's going to happen next. And we need to have an agreement from you that either you're going to live with it or you're going to find someplace else to worship. That's accountability. So whether you're at work and the boss is the person that ultimately the conflict goes to, and everybody knows the boss, once they decide, you can either say, okay, I'm going to do that. That's a government illustration, or a military illustration. Or you can get your resume in order. Start looking for another job. But you can't go underground. You can't start coalition building. You can't start doing unhealthy things, not in a healthy organization. In unhealthy organizations, either things don't get dealt with or people won't feel listened to. Problems aren't getting resolved, and they just keep piling up. I do want to point out this one thing. Everything that I've said up to this point is assuming that the person that you're dealing with, although you might have a honest-to-God, deep disagreement with them, their heart and their desire is that we work this out in a win-win way to everybody's satisfaction. And there's a book called Win-Win, Conflict Resolution. And the author makes the claim, he's a professor from Fuller, that 90% of the people that you're dealing with, they want to work it out. They do. They might be really mad, they might be really frustrated, but in their heart of hearts, they're not trying to bury you. They're open to a healthy process to resolving this thing. But there are some people who do not want to work out conflict. In fact, they're broken people. There's a book that we read in SPRC, it's called Antagonists in the Church. But it's interesting when people read this book because light bulbs go on about family members and people at work that they knew, and it's just like, oh, aha, now I realize. There's people that use conflict, stir the pot up in order to get what they want. There are people that grew up in households where it was modeled for them, picking a fight or discrediting somebody so that you can get moved into a position that you want to get moved into, or something that you didn't want to see happen will stop and be thwarted. And these people are hard to identify because they use triangular communication, they use gossip and innuendo, and they're whispering and they're saying, I know something about this person. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. So-and-so said this about them, but I don't know if it's true. Very passive-aggressive. This is the definition in the book. Antagonists are individuals who, on the basis of non-substantive evidence, they don't have the facts, they don't have evidence to support what they're saying, they go out of their way to make insatiable demands. It's never-ending, usually attacking the person or performance of other people. So they're running other people down. And these attacks are selfish in nature, tearing down rather than trying to build up the family, the marriage, the department, and are frequently directed against those in a leadership capacity. These are unhealthy people. And in most situations, you don't want to get in a one-on-one with them because they're a lot more adept at slinging mud than you are. These people need to be addressed by a committee, by a group of people. They're brought in and they're held accountable at work. You know, it seems like we're having a lot of problems in this pod, and when we started talking to individuals, your name kept coming up as somebody that said this and somebody said this. These people hate to have that light focused on them. That's not how they want to be seen. So maybe if you have some conflict in your life, and you feel like you're not getting anywhere, you're following these steps and it's just not moving ahead, maybe, just maybe, you're dealing with one of these personalities, something to keep in the back. But most of the people that you're dealing with, certainly within the church, understand Romans, the 12th chapter, verse 18, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everybody. Just keep working at it. This is our job as the followers of Christ. Remember Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers. This is the sacrifice that God is looking for. This is the acceptable sacrifice that's talked about in Jeremiah. This is what matters. Don't just come and throw $20 in the... I'd rather that you keep your $20 and you go work out things with your wife. Go work out things with your husband. Go work out things with your kid. Go work out things with your coworker. Why? Because when we, as the followers of Christ, are doing the hard work of conflict management, what we're doing is we're standing on the hallmark of our faith, and that's to love one another. Amen?